La Corriveau. The Canadian Broadcasting Corporation presents a play by Mac Shoub, based on the trial for murder of Marie-Joseph Corriveau in 1763. The play is part of the series Famous Canadian Trials, produced in the Montreal studios of the CBC.
If there be a single, truly haunted spot in the entire province of Quebec, it must surely be that spot on the south shore of the St. Lawrence River, halfway between the churches of Bienville and Saint-Joseph-de-Lévis, where many, many years ago, there stood a gibbet on the heights of Nepvin. On this ancient spot was introduced for the first time one of the delicate refinements of civilization brought to French Canada by the British conquerors. The sinister practice we refer to was hanging in irons, an ignominy which we are told in old English documents was strangely dreaded by even the most hardened criminals. To be hung in irons meant that your corpse was placed into a sort of iron cage and thus suspended from a gibbet, usually by a highway. There it hung until it fell to pieces from the effects of time and the weather, and only a few hideous bones and scraps of dried flesh remained as evidence of the strong hand of the law. The first Canadian to earn this dubious distinction was Marie-Joseph Corriveau, a handsome woman of 30. She was the daughter of one well-to-do farmer and the wife of another in the parish of Saint-Vallier near Quebec City. The coin of her memory is engraved with further distinction. Hers was the first trial for murder in Canada after the conquest of Quebec in 1759. It was a most unusual affair, and it happened this way. On a winter's day towards the end of January, in the year 1763, Monsieur Louis Daudier, husband of Marie-Joseph Corriveau, was found dead in his stable, his skull torn open by a violent blow. A doctor was summoned.
Mon Dieu, how did it happen, Madame Daudier?
Can you do something, doctor?
No, he is dead. When did you find him?
A few hours ago. I sent for you immediately.
What happened?
That beast of a horse over there. Early this evening, Louis said he wanted to visit the stable. The horse was restless. He wanted to quiet him. I will kill that horse. With my own hands, I will kill that ugly devil.
No. That will do no good. What happened after your husband came out here to the stable?
I heard a terrible cry. I ran in from the house. Louis was there. On the floor. His head.
How did it get here? Surely the horse did not kick him this far from the stall.
My father and I, after I found him, we dragged him over here. That horse. Tomorrow I will shoot that beast.
We had better go now, madame. We can do no good here. Come.
Thus, history met Marie-Joseph Corriveau, widow of the newly dead Louis Daudier. A woman whose life and doings would have held little to interest us, were it not for the shrewd peasant instincts of her neighbors.
You're a fool to believe it.
Please, woman, I saw him lying there with my own eyes.
Oh, he may be dead, yes, but no horse killed him.
What are you saying?
He's the second one she put away.
Daudier was her second husband?
Oh, you doctors are all the same. You have eyes for nothing but little pimples and warts and the important things you never see. Yes, you dolt. Daudier was her second husband. The first was Charles Bouchard. She married him. She was only 16.
Bouchard. I do not remember. Did I ever treat him?
How do I know? It wouldn't have done any good even if you had. She got rid of him, too. 3 years ago.
Oh, come, how could you know that?
The whole parish knew. Oh, she's a great one, that fancy La Corriveau, with her airs and graces and Paris education and her taste for luxury. Being a farmer's wife was way below her. She wanted the wildlife, the paint and the furs. Life à la Quebec, that was too dreary for the likes of her.
I do not understand this nonsense you are talking. Why then did she marry this man?
Joseph, the father, the old man. You know him?
Yes, I know him.
He forced her. He thought he was making a good match for that precious daughter of his.
The first one, Bouchard. How did he die?
She poured molten lead in his ear while he was asleep.
Woman, you are silly. That is something from a storybook.
Voila, yes. But the whole parish knew. His death was not a natural one.
Well, if they knew so much, why did they not arrest her?
Who was to arrest her? Have you forgotten what it was like 3 years ago when the damned English came? No law, no courts, no civil authorities. The damned soldiers, that is all there was. What did anyone care about a murder in some little parish when the whole of Quebec was still bleeding?
Hmm. Were there any children?
Thank God, no. Not from either husband.
Why did she not go back to France? Why did she marry Daudier?
I suppose the old man convinced her Daudier was a fine catch. He was quite wealthy, you know. But he had something else that he wasn't telling her.
What is that?
A mistress. A fancy woman. Isabelle Sylvain is her name. There was a little surprise for La Corriveau, wasn't it?
God help us, woman. How do you know all these things?
You keep your eyes and your ears open, and that's how you know.
He found out about the mistress?
Immediately. It was an open secret. Oh, the stories I heard of how they used to fight.
Oh.
La Corriveau and Daudier, stupid. Cat and dog. And always he'd run off to the other woman. Men are such pigs.
Well, you should be glad he's dead.
Bite your tongue. It is a sin to kill.
Of course.
Was there blood on the foot of the horse?
I do not know. I did not look.
Well, tomorrow morning you go back and look. I'll bet you won't find any. And look carefully at the dead man's head to see what it was that really killed him.
Yes, yes, of course. I will certainly do that.
Rumors, gossip, speculation, insinuations, wonder. The five fingers of an accusing hand reaching out for La Corriveau. It did not take long for popular opinion to boil up and scold this handsome woman, who now lived aloofly alone with her old father, Joseph.
When is someone going to do something about her? Are they going to let her get away with it a second time?
Why do you keep annoying me with your questions? I am only a doctor, not the law. I am not paid to carry out investigations. There is no regular judicial machinery in this country. Blame the English. Don't blame me. Now, leave me alone, woman.
We should go to the priest. That's what we should do. We should form a committee and go to the priest.
Fine, stop jabbering and go to the priest. Now, leave me in peace for 5 minutes.
And go to the priest they did. And the priest went to his superiors. And his superiors, after ordering the detention of La Corriveau and her father, then brought the matter to the attention of the British garrison, then occupying Quebec. There, Father Glapion was received by Lieutenant Colonel Morris.
Ah, Father Glapion, how good to see you. Won't you sit down, please?
Merci, thank you, mon colonel. It is good of you to welcome me.
You are always welcome, Father. Now, what can I do for you?
A matter most urgent, most serious.
Oh?
There are ugly rumors of murder in a nearby parish.
I have not heard of them.
How well. Your interests do not particularly concern themselves along these little personal lines today.
I suppose not. The broader view is our horizon. Is that what you're reprimanding me for?
We must not forget the little things that concern individual beings. We have no judiciary as yet. That is true. But that does not mean we cannot have law and order.
Of course. Continue, Father.
Well, in the parish of Saint-Vallier, not far from this garrison of yours, there lives a woman who calls herself Marie-Josette Corriveau. Although quite young, she has already buried two fine husbands. The parishioners are quite upset.
Did them in, eh? Is that what they think?
Your idiom, mon colonel, is strange to me, but your meaning is not. Yes, that is what they think.
Hmm.
I must point out very strongly that a gross violation of the holy sacrament of marriage is suspected to have taken place. Something must be done to pacify the feelings of my parishioners. Otherwise, I cannot be answerable for what will happen. I hope you understand the situation I am trying to convey.
Really, Father, it seems to me that all this fuss is based only on a matter of suspicion. I'm sure you don't expect me to...
You do not give me credit, sir. I have already had the people concerned in this matter put under restraint. Do you think I would have acted that way if suspicion were my sole evidence? After all, the days of the Inquisition are long past, are they not?
Forgive me. I did not mean to suggest...
Of course not, mon colonel. I merely wish to stress that it is more than mere rumor and suspicion which brings me to your chambers.
You have evidence?
Yes, the strongest kind. I have a signed deposition from an eyewitness to the murder.
After this, the British military authorities had no other option but to try La Corriveau. Since there was no civil court then in existence, the case had to come before a military tribunal or court-martial. The case was presided over by Lieutenant Colonel Morris of the Quebec garrison. A courthouse was set up in one of the halls of the Ursuline convent, where, for those concerned with such incidental footnotes, the table at which the members of the court-martial sat is still preserved as a curiosity.
This court is now convened and signed this day by its president, Lieutenant Colonel Morris, who will now state the nature of the inquiry.
It is charged that during the last week of January in the year 1763... person or persons did willfully and of malice aforethought kill and murder one Louis Dodier.
The proceedings, being hastily convened, were conducted in the form of an inquiry similar to a coroner's inquest. It began with medical evidence.
And when I examined the body of the dead man closely, I came to the opinion that Monsieur Dodier's terrible head wounds were much more likely to have been caused by some sharply pointed instrument rather than by the shoe of a horse.
Next to take the witness stand was Isabelle Sylvain, the mistress of the dead man. She told a shocking story.
I swear this is the truth. I saw the whole thing with my own eyes. I saw Louis Dodier killed in cold blood by his own wife. I saw her murder him. Louis Dodier was asleep. His wife attacked him while he was in bed. I saw her strike him several violent blows on his head with a brock.
What is a brock?
A fork used for pitching straw, Your Honor. A large, terrible fork with three sharp prongs in it. Mm-hmm. She hit him several times on the head while he was asleep. It was horrible. When he was dead, that woman fetched her old father.
Where did she go to fetch him from?
The old man lived in the same house, Your Honor.
Go on.
She went to fetch the old man. He helped her drag the dead body from the bed. They dragged it out of the farmhouse into the stable. In the stable, they set up the body in such a position that it might look as if Louis had been killed by several kicks from his horse. But he did not die from the horse. She killed him with her own hands. I saw it. I swear it before God. She murdered him. I saw it.
But the drama was not over. The climax waited quietly in the wings, from whence it was led on stage by Marie-Joseph herself.
That woman lies to you. I did not kill my husband. She tells you this only out of hate for me. Everybody knows the sort of woman she is. How can anyone believe one word that comes from her ugly mouth? She lies to you. I did not kill my husband. If someone did, you must look beyond me.
Where else can we look, madame?
Ask my father. He will show you where to look.
Joseph Corriveau, old and feeble, took the stand. He was the last witness.
My daughter did not kill my son-in-law. Not that I would have blamed her if she did, but she did not. I tell you that.
How do you know she did not?
I know. Because it was I who killed him.
You admit to the murder of your son-in-law?
I admit. I killed Louis, not Marie. He deserved killing. I was beside myself with anger when I saw how faithless he was to my beautiful daughter. He was the worst kind of pig. And right from the beginning, I made up my mind to avenge the terrible insult he offered to my daughter. I killed him with my own hand, with a brock. just as the Sylvain woman said.
He lies! He's protecting her!
Silence! You must be quiet. Silence.
It is the truth that I tell you. I killed him. My daughter did no more than help me to carry the body to the stable after I was finished. That hysterical woman, Isabelle Sylvain, you can understand why she lies about my daughter. She is crazy with jealousy. That is why she lies. Thank you, Your Honor.
In face of this confession, the bewildered court could come to only one conclusion. Joseph Corriveau was put on trial for the murder of Louis Daudier.
Joseph Corriveau, the court's unanimous sentence is that you suffer death by hanging.
The prisoner will leave the court.
Marie-Josette Corriveau, you are found guilty of being an accomplice after the fact. The court's unanimous sentence is that you receive 60 lashes on your bare back and that you be branded with a hot iron on the left hand with the letter M.
The prisoner will leave the court.
Isabelle Sylvain, you are found guilty of perjury and of misleading the court. The court's unanimous sentence is that you receive 60 lashes on your bare back and that you be branded with a hot iron on the left hand with the letter P.
The prisoner will leave the court.
The court is closed.
Justice then appeared to have been dealt out, but by no means to everyone's satisfaction. Popular opinion was outraged, and the priests were far from happy with the result of the trial.
It is sad, sad, sad. It is all so sad.
Father?
These Englishmen are so proud of their civilizing mission among the inferior races, as they call them. When one looks to them for justice, see what happens. Don't they know that this poor old man is completely under the thumb of his daughter? Everybody else knows it. Why don't they?
They may not care to know it, Father. We ask for justice. They deliver punishment. And thus for them the equation has worked out.
Are we to believe Joseph Corriveau's confession?
I do not believe it. The people do not believe it.
I do not believe it either. Tonight, that poor man is about to die in sin on the scaffold for the sake of his daughter. There is no one to stop it.
He has been asking for you, Father.
What, for me?
Yes, he wants you to hear his last confession. He does not wish to pass from this life without receiving the last rites of the church. And he will speak only to you.
But why only me? Why not his parish priest?
He asks for you. He will accept a visit only from the Father Superior, he says.
Indeed. His burden must be heavier than we suspected. I will go to him.
Here you are, Father. This is his cell.
Thank you. I will call you when I'm through.
Righto. I won't be far off.
Father.
You have sent for me, my son?
They are going to hang me tonight, huh?
That is the wish of the court, my son. Have you made your peace?
There is no peace for me, Father.
There is peace for all men.
Not for me.
You are afraid.
No, not of dying. But I am about to die badly. Of that, I am afraid.
Why badly, my son?
Those things I said in court.
Yes?
They were not true.
Many of us knew they were not true, my son.
Oh, they were not true. I swear they were not.
There is still time for truth.
If I speak, it will bring harm to Marie.
Oh, such harm as there is only temporal, my son. Limited by our present life. She already lives with her own harm. Whether you speak or keep silent, you must think of your own soul.
I did not kill my son-in-law.
Yes, we knew that, my son. It is good to hear you say it of your own will.
I am innocent of Louis' death. That other woman, Isabelle Sylvain, what she spoke was all the truth. My daughter, God save her soul. She killed him, just the way Isabel told it. She did not speak perjury. She told the truth. He deserved killing, but I did not kill him. It was Marie. God have mercy on her.
Will you tell this to the Englishman?
I will tell them. I must tell them. I cannot die badly in the eyes of God. I will tell them. Oh, Father, my heart is so heavy.
The gossip had been right then. Village cackle, the exchange of suspicions and ideas, ironically for once, had been dreadfully accurate. The British authorities had no alternative but to reprieve old Joseph Corriveau and order the court-martial to be held again, this time with Marie Corriveau as the accused. The date was April the 15th, 1763. There was no defense, except for the statements of the accused herself.
There is no evidence against me, except those lies from the mouths of a cheap, fancy woman and a foolish old man who is out of his mind. I did not kill my husband. I deny everything that has been said about me. None of it is true. Also, I point out to all of you who are so concerned about the law and justice that I have already been tried once on this charge and found innocent. I cannot try this charge and found innocent. I cannot lawfully be tried twice for the same offense. So why am I here in the midst of this mockery?
Although she continued to deny her guilt, the circumstances were altogether too strong against her.
Marie-Joseph Corriveau, this court finds you guilty of murder as charged and sentences you to be hanged until dead. As a special mark of the infamy of your behavior, this court orders that your body after death shall be hung in chains at a public crossroad which shall be so designated by the governor. The court is closed.
Well, that puts an end to it, doesn't it, Colonel?
Indeed it does, Governor. I think we have won the popular vote. The people are quite in sympathy with our decision.
I am determined to make an example of that awful woman.
I suppose we have every reason, haven't we, sir?
I am beyond the point of supposition, Morris. I am convinced. Firstly, this La Corriveau, as they call her, has made a fool of British justice. Secondly, the people, according to British law, the murder of a husband by a wife is a particularly heinous crime, which must be punished with the maximum disgrace. Therefore, Colonel, instead of choosing a spot within the parish of St. Valier, I order that the corpse of this woman be hung in irons and suspended from a gibbet at the fork of the four roads on the heights of Nepin, halfway between the churches of Bienville and Saint-Joseph-de-Lévis. I understand that is perhaps the busiest intersection in these parts.
It is, Governor. Every inhabitant along the south shore of the St. Lawrence must pass through this intersection on his way to sell his farm produce in Quebec City.
Perfect. Order the cage and hang her.
Hey! Hey, blacksmith, chuck the hammer in for a mile, will you?
Eh, what do you want with me, soldier? What have I done?
Nothing, mate. It's what you're gonna do.
And what is that?
I have an order here from his nibs, the governor himself. He wants you to build a cage.
What kind of a cage?
Here, I have a picture of it. See?
Whose body is it?
La Corriveau, that's who.
Why do you not let her rest, huh? Was it not enough to kill her?
Yeah, don't start up with me. I do what I'm told, and you better do the same. Now, here's what it's like. The head, trunk, and limbs are all outlined in heavy iron bands, see? Like this. These bands are all riveted and held together by cross pieces, see? Like this. Here on top goes a nook, which turns in its socket. You understand, blacksmith?
It is a most fearsome sight, monsieur.
You don't have to look, matey. All you have to do is make it. Now get busy.
When the cage containing La Corriveau's body was hung, it became a universal object of horror. For many months, the people of Saint-Joseph-de-Lévis refused to go out at night, for fear of passing the spot where the cage had been placed.
We will all be destroyed by this evil thing. Every night, as soon as it gets dark, the ghost of La Corriveau descends from our cage and goes to the chart where she tears open the fresh graves and devours the corpses. They say that the other night, a young boy passing there was attacked and wounded by this terrible vampire. Oh, Mary, full of grace.
Finally, a group of young men of the parish, bolder than the rest, went by night to the hillock on which the gibbet stood, took down the cage, and secretly buried it in unhallowed ground just outside the wall of the parish cemetery. And that is the end of the case of La Corriveau. But for those with an appetite for footnotes, we submit the following items for your edification. The site of the grave was lost to memory until in 1830 the church of Saint-Joseph was burned down. At that time, while rooting among the ruins, diggers unearthed the old cage. All that was left of the beautiful La Corriveau was a single leg bone. Even this relic was not allowed to rest in peace. Unscrupulous profiteers stole both the cage and the leg bone and exhibited them in public in Quebec for several years. Finally, as one would suspect, the great T. Barnum visited Quebec, saw the relics, and bought them for his American Museum in New York City. There, La Corriveau joined a weird collection of living and dead curiosities, including a menagerie of wild animals and freaks. On July the 13th, in 1865, the famous American Museum caught fire, and what was left of La Corriveau went up in flames. Thus, the unhappy ghost of Marie-Joseph Corriveau did at last her quietus make. So be it.
La Corriveau was produced in Montreal by Rupert Kaplan as part of the CBC series Famous Canadian Trials. Script by Mac Shoup, based on research by R.S. Lambert. Leading roles were played by Eileen Clifford, Powis Thomas, Phyllis Carter, Albert Miller, Norman Tavis, John Codner, Paul Hecht, Eric Koski, Ruth Dehan, George Alexander, Howard Rishpan, and Gary Files.